Ballard, and I'd like to welcome you to Women Are Not Funny Radio, the internet radio show that would so like to insist that its premise is dead wrong. And maybe today we will actually disprove our premise, because today our featured guest is a returning guest, the very funny Martha Giffen. And she and I will be talking about social media and internet marketing and where and how the two intersect. Well, you know that blonde ambition is something I know something about. But the thing I have come to know is that today's guest can teach me a thing or two about it. She is, after all, the very reason that I now start every Women Are Not Funny radio show by asking every single guest those two telling and paranoid questions. I always have to ask now, are you using your appearance on Women Are Not Funny Radio as a stepping stone to something better? And are you actually here to take over my show? Well, I don't have to ask Martha those questions, because the last time she was here, she revealed the very nature of her ambition. And yes, she did see this show as a stepping stone to her larger vision. And yes, she wants to take over a show, but not this particular show. She actually wants to take over the Larry King Show. So I can dispense with the questions. I already know the answers, and given that she has no designs on my show, I suppose she's not much of a threat. Martha has been, is, and has been, that is, very many things. Currently, she is calling herself an internet marketer, and she proves that claim from doing all sorts of things that an internet marketer would do. Last weekend, she spoke at the 8th Unseminar, and last night, she held her first ever webinar. So very brave. So, Martha, how did that go?
Well. Thank you for having me on, Kay. So good to see you again, or hear you again, or be on your show. I absolutely love the show. Last night was interesting. I want to back up just for a minute, though. I didn't actually speak at Unseminar 8. I spoke the day before for a smaller group that was there for something else at the Unseminar. So I wasn't actually on the stage at Unseminar. I just wanted to clear that up.
Honey, ever hear of hype? You know what? I don't want to discourage you in any way, but you're not going to have much of a future in internet marketing if you can't get into the hype a little bit. You know,
I guess it was some hype. My concern is that my fan base would hear that. It'd just be a little,
all they would think, Martha, I can tell you the truth, all they would think is this is what happened.
Well,
I got it wrong.
I got it wrong. I was speaking the whole weekend.
Yeah, well, no doubt about that. But your fan base would know the truth of it all, and that is, I just got it wrong. You tell me about speaking, and you were at the Unseminar. I assume you spoke at the Unseminar. But anyway, last night you did a webinar. How cool is that?
I did my first ever webinar, and if anybody knows how tech-challenged I am, that was the biggest bugbear for me, was getting past all that technical stuff to do it. You know, the talking, I'm okay with the talking, but oh my gosh, it looked like an airplane in front of me with all the little the buttons and things that you have to push and you have to think about. And it was like, okay, we'll see how it goes. And I did it live, and just went where it went.
I can only imagine. I have attended a lot of seminars that use that technology, the go-to webinar technology, and to me it looks incredibly complex, and I am so impressed. I told you earlier today, you are one, probably others have done it, but I'm not aware of them, you are one of two people I know who did her first ever webinar using the new technology and just went for it without doing a test one, without doing a little dummied up one first. You actually did it with actual people, potential clients and customers on the line. You did it for the first time in front of everyone. I think that is incredibly brave.
You know, looking back on it, what was I thinking? But, you know, I mean, now that it's over, I can say that. But I can honestly say, you know, it's really the best way to do anything, just jump in there and do it. Because if you always are second guessing, you know, I might mess up on the tech. I will say this, I did relieve a lot of my tech anxiety in that I had my webmaster on the other end of the line, and where I could, if anything, you know, really major had happened, it had crashed or anything, I would just pass the baton to him and he would take over. So I eliminated my own, you know, anxiety about that.
Well,
that was
smart. And I, you know, I told you, and I don't mean this in any way to be disrespectful. It was actually very darling. You did sound kind of like a deer in the headlights some of the time, but you're right. That let's do it attitude is really the only way to go. And as far as the technology going wrong, I can tell you it will, because GoToWebinar is fairly complex, but I have really set in on a million of those, and some of them by the higher price spread, so to speak. And there have been enormous, and this is not in any way to knock that company or that technology. I think they're incredible. But it can go wrong in a million different ways, and even having your tech guy on board can't always prevent that. So,
you know what, what I'm glad about. I'm glad that I'm hearing you say that today instead of yesterday. Like it.
No, I think it's fabulous.
Freaks me out a little more.
And what is I don't believe that for a moment, because I talked to you about 2 or 3 weeks ago when I knew you were planning to do it, and you were just, you know, you were just ready to try. And even though you hadn't been a subscriber of GoToWebinar, you signed up for their free trial for, you know, to do this. And we talked about that today, and I thought what you said about that was very, very funny, because I reminded you that every single person who subscribes to GoToWebinar started out with a trial period, because no one, I hope, is stupid enough to say, oh, you'll give me a free trial? No, never mind. I just want to go ahead and pay, you know, for the initial 30 days,
yeah,
even though you offer free.
Yeah, oh, please don't let me do the free trial. I'd like to pay for it. I don't know. You're right. Everybody does the free trial first. But I do like that, the concept of it, because then if you get into that medium, you find out, oh, my gosh, this is so not for me, then, you know, you're not tied into it and you go do something else. Because webinars, they're kind of a strange bird for me in that, you know, in the one that I did, it was a lot of just plain teaching, so it's just me talking, but you're getting no feedback from the class. Not that they have to talk, but you're not seeing facial expressions, you're not getting any feedback. So that was really kind of odd for me. I prefer, I guess, a live audience so I can feed off of them.
Well, one of the things that you did, you know, and I told you earlier that I attended your webinar, and part of the reason I did is so I can make fun of you today about it, but one of the things that you did...
Is that not a true friend, people?
You know, I think my friendship calls for such things, but one of the things that I did notice is that there were several occasions where you would throw a question out to us, the audience, you know, forgetting momentarily that we had really no way to answer you. Like, are you hearing this? Or is this being recorded? Or that sort of thing. And I felt very, you know, simpatico about that, because I've had my own experience, certainly with teleseminars and even on this show, even though I know that we do have millions of listeners, and by that, let me just say, when I talk about our millions of listeners, I'm not talking about here now with us live. I'm talking about the, you know, the aggravation. I am talking about the aggregate of the people who listen live and the people who listen later. I'm sure it numbers among the millions, but that, of course, is only an estimate. At any rate, you know, we don't know who's listening and what they're thinking. We have a pretty good idea that they're thinking, you know, why are these women rattling on and what are they talking about? This is boring, that sort of thing. But we don't really know. But I have had my own experience. There was a time in the past where there was a company that gives seminars and, you know, paid seminars. And so they obtained my services as a content provider for two of them. And these were seminars that had to do with my work as a foundation executive and what I knew about both fundraising to women, that was one of them, and one was about essentially about estate planning for the benefit of an organization. So I gave these two teleseminars, and it was just a monologue. And the company that sponsored them charged $200 for a one-hour seminar of me just rattling on. And this is not for a recording. This is just to attend live. And so I felt a lot of pressure to be good because one of the things they offered was a full money-back guarantee. And I certainly didn't want them to, you know, I didn't want to deliver a teleseminar that was going to generate refunds, you know. So I wanted to do a really good job. But I, even though I am not shy and even though I am very accustomed to speaking and having an audience, I found these to be just dreary because I was giving a monologue and, like you say, with absolutely no feedback mechanism. So I didn't know, you know, I was trying to be amusing. I was trying to be informative. I was trying to sound smart. I was trying not to be boring. I was trying to give value. I was trying to give all those things, but I had absolutely no way of knowing if I, at the time, if I were achieving my goals. So I don't know what the answer is, Martha. I don't know how you can actually, you know, perhaps trying out your material before a live audience, before you take it to the web. I don't know the answer. What do you think?
Well, no, my webinar was unique. It actually was a little bit technical, which is will sound funny to people who know me, but I was teaching people how to use Twitter. And so on last night's call, you know, I was having to do a lot of, you know, click here, type this in, you know, set up your profile, do whatever. And so it felt very rigid, like, you know, just step by step. So, you know, it's hard to make that funny. It's hard to make that too engaging. But, you know, I did the best I could. Like you said, you know, you feel the pressure. I just felt the pressure to get the material across and not be so dry. But when you're not getting a response, what is your lot? When to tell them?
You know what, Martha? What kind of phone are you on? Because I'm getting a really funny noise. I don't know how it's coming through in the recording, but... Hello?
Really? Well, I got to tell you, this is the only phone that I have.
Okay. Well,
so
you know,
we have to make it work.
it's coming in and out. It's coming in and out. And the other thing is, you know, it's kind of a service for our listeners because if they cannot hear what you're saying, they can just imagine whatever they would like to.
Well,
cool.
You know, in my case, that might be a good thing. You know, imagine away, people. And let me tell you, when you're imagining things, take it as far out as you can. I love that.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, I think it's kind of an extra feature of this particular edition of Women Are Not Funny. We could call it, you know, sort of like imagine what Martha is saying, or better yet, guess what Martha is saying. Which,
yeah, they can
know,
imagine what I'm saying, imagine where I am, imagine what I look like, imagine who I'm with, all of those things. I love it.
Well, speaking of imagining what you look like, one thing you did in last night's webinar is you took a stand. You told people that were, you know, you told the people who were listening, and you did this as an instruction, essentially. You tell them when you put your avatar up, make sure you use a picture. And apparently you feel rather strongly about that.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to be on the Internet and if you're going to be, you know, we're all self-promoters. Come on. Even if you say you're not, you really are. So when you're out there, you want people to know who you are, where to find you, what you look like. Please don't stick a picture of your dog or your horse or whatever as your avatar. It needs to be you. And I do feel strongly about that.
You know, I have mixed feelings about this, given my choice of avatars, you know.
I like your avatar. Now, you're the exception. I forgot. You're the you're the exception. Because now, when I see your avatar, I mean, to me, that is Kay. I see you as that in my brain. Does everybody know what Kay's avatar looks like?
What is hilarious, Martha, is when I see my avatar, I think it's me too. And I have this terrible story to tell about this. But when you mentioned you don't like people's dogs as avatars, what I hate is photos of people kissing their dogs as avatars, or their dogs kissing them, or that sort of thing. I just cannot go there. Also, I just am not too fond for photographs where the photograph, the message that the photograph seems to be giving is, I have breasts. prominent breasts is something in an avatar I don't much go for. And, I don't know why that is.
Well, you know what? If you insist on going there, I would just say, I am a big-breasted woman. People have not met me. And I always take great to be sure that I'm photographed from the neck up. I do everything I can not to call attention to that.
Well, the thing about it is, and I'm sure there could be differing points of views, but women have breasts, okay? We know this. This is something we know. So, why, given that, does your avatar need to reinforce it? Because we already figured it out, I think. But that's just me. But no, I do use the doll avatar, and for me, it's just kind of a happy accident, because it truly happened this way. When I joined up on Twitter, I said, "Well, I don't know what photo I want to use, and I don't, blah blah blah. I'm just going to use this until I figure it out." And I said, "It'll be great, because it will be a reminder to me that none of this is real. This is just not real. This is social media, and there's no reality to it." But I quickly learned that there is reality to it. It's very real. It's realer than real, in my opinion. But by that time, I really got so much positive attention for the doll avatar that I just stuck with it. And
well, but see, I think it represents you perfectly, because you are a doll.
Well, that is absolutely.
You are a doll. So there you have it.
There you go. And so, but here's the thing. I was in a very good position, because I have a friend who was my personal physician for a period of time. And I told her that I thought, and she's very geeky, so I really thought this was the truth. I told her she would love Twitter. She would just get so much pleasure out of it, because I certainly did. So I introduced her to Twitter, and she signed on and got a Twitter account. And in the course of the time that she was active on Twitter, if you would call it that, you really couldn't call it that, but she had a tweet that said, "Yes, Kay, you do actually look like your avatar, but the truth is you're even a lot snazzier looking than that." That she literally said that, Martha. Okay, so then anytime anyone wanted to give me grief about my avatar, I would just, take the URL from my friend's tweet and send them a link and say, "This is what my personal physician had to say." Okay, so it's very cool. It's like I had documented proof that I looked like my avatar, or better than my avatar.
Yes, I think you're better than that.
Here is what happened to me, though. Eventually, since my friend, which she remains my friend despite this horrible action, she left Twitter. She didn't just quit coming around. She canceled her account. And when she canceled her account, that tweet went up into vapor. It's just gone forever. Maybe it's in the Library of Congress where all the tweets now reside, but it certainly is not obtainable by putting in the URL. I mean, how devastating is that?
I mean, but I want to back up a minute. All the tweets are in the Library of Congress.
Did you not know that?
You know what? For some reason, that little tidbit has been left out of my knowledge bank.
It was something that happened, I think it's about, this happened about 3 months ago. They were, it was like a gift. It was given over an arrangement. So,
do you think it's a gift that they have to have?
Well, it is there, you know, it is a huge database of information about, you know, what people were doing at any given time. So, to some extent, perhaps it has some value. I don't know. But that is a fact, and I actually think it is very cool. But back to my story about my physician friend who came on Twitter and left. She just found it difficult, and I certainly can relate to that because when I first started with Twitter, which was now literally 2 years ago, June 18th, 2 years ago, is when I first opened my account. I can't even believe I stuck with it because I didn't much like it. I couldn't figure it out. I thought it was weird. But for whatever reason, I stayed with it long enough to learn how to get some value of it. But why do you think it's so hard for people?
You know, I've given that some thought, actually. I mean, it's people that are in the moment. And if you have not, you have to do it for a while to kind of see the value of it because it's like walking into a conversation that's already taking place. You have to sit and wait your turn to jump in. You have to see somebody that's talking about something that you might want to engage in and do it that way. But Twitter kind of reminds me, when I first started doing it 2 years ago also, and it really reminded me of the chat rooms of, you know, days gone by where there would just be so many people in the chat room. Now Twitter is used for so many different things. You know, people are directing others, you know, to read articles, read blogs, and some people just don't think they have the time for it. But, you know, it depends on what you want Twitter for. If you want it to just be a social outlet, then, you know, you use that time just like you would, you know, trying to meet people. You can go meet them on Twitter, engage in conversation. I don't know why people find it hard.
Well, one thing about it is it from the very beginning, and I don't think this has changed, it has kind of a reputation, particularly from people who would knock it, as being a real time sink. And I have to say, I have spent a lot of time there, but so much of it was, you know, worthwhile time for me. At least that's the way I feel about it. Last night you came out in very strong voice against automation, and I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, I had seen a quote actually yesterday on Twitter where somebody had said, you know, automating your Twitter account is like having someone else send the Hallmark card for you. And,
yeah.
You know, to me, social media, I mean, the word social means that you're engaging with people. It means that, you know, you're there, that you're doing it. I mean, if you're going, and it's also networking. If you're going into something where it's a networking situation, are you going to send, you know, somebody in for you to meet the people you need to meet? I mean, it's craziness. I'm not for automation. But saying that, I have used automation before. I have used it to send out tweets during the middle of the night when I'm sleeping. But you know what I'm talking about, the automation. It's all being caught, whatever, going through their stream all the time. And, you know, they're not there. And who really cares? What I find out, once you realize they're not there, you don't really care. You either unfollow them or you're not paying attention to them anyway.
Well, and see, what happens is where you get busted is when someone like me sees a tweet from Martha, because I'm awake in the middle of the night, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times. So if I see a tweet from you and I go, oh, hey, Martha, what's going on? And, you know, dead silence because you are getting your beauty sleep. Well, that seems very unfriendly. And so I think it kind of backfires. But you know, one of the things that's been amazing to me, and perhaps we'll have time during the course of our time together to talk about it a little more, but there is a new software for Twitter called Market Me Tweet. and or maybe it's Market Me tweets. At any rate, I became aware of them because as part of their very comprehensive Twitter application that does any number of things, one aspect of it permits you to have a branded link underneath your tweet for any to direct people to any website that you choose. So essentially it's as if you are tweeting from your own website instead of from TweetDeck or the iPhone or, you know, whatever those other links say. So I thought that was very cool, and they developed a free software as part of their paid software, Market Me Tweet. And so what was really fascinating to me about this is that my own company was developing a similar software simultaneously, but this other company got their software out to market earlier. At any rate, Market Me Tweet, the comprehensive program that you can buy, permits you to put in tweets to schedule them up to a year in advance, Martha. Can you imagine
that? I'm not getting to comprehend why you would need that, why you want to do that. I don't get that. A year.
I think it would be most ineffective, but for, you know, all I can figure out is that there might be someone who would have the idea, I will just put in my tweet. You know, I'll sit down, I'll devote 2 days to it, I'll devote 6 hours to it, whatever it would take. I don't know what it would take to do a year's worth of tweets, but I'll go ahead, I'll pre-schedule them, and then I'm done with Twitter. I have my Twitter presence. And to me, that seems really, really, you know, useful.
Weird. Another, it's plain weird. Say what it is. It's just plain weird. Anybody.
It is.
A weird concept.
It is weird, but here's another way that people go about trying to combat the whole idea that they're, you know, wasting time. They use their tweets to update their status on a number of different platforms, like Facebook and FriendFeed and all of those. So they, you know, they do one communication and it goes out to a bunch of different platforms. So that's another way that people try to solve the time problem. But
you know what? I'll be honest. I don't use that either. Do you do that?
Well, in the first place, I left Facebook. I deactivated my Facebook account. I hate Facebook's greasy green guts. But so, no, I don't, and I don't use it with LinkedIn, although I think my tweets may sometimes show up on LinkedIn. I'm not sure. But, you know, I have since heard some advice that I think is really, really good advice, and it's kind of counter to my whole approach to Twitter, but it is beginning to make sense to me, and that is, in order to keep Twitter from being a time sink, just be more targeted and effective about who you follow and who follows you. I think there's a lot of good sense in that approach.
I think you are better at that than I am, and to follow people, because I just, with the exception, let's say, I do discriminate on pornography. I don't follow pornography sites if they follow me, but.
What about bots?
I do.
You follow bots?
No, I don't.
Well, see, I think you're giving me too much credit, and I have to tell you that the person who's been guiltiest of giving me too much credit about my Twitter operations is me, you know, because I want to give myself enormous credit for being totally social there. And when I went there, I mean, literally, being on Twitter without any sort of guile at all, just totally social. So I viewed it sort of like being a huge dinner party. You know, they talk about the office water cooler or a cocktail party. To me, it's a huge dinner party, or this is how I used to see it. And so I was looking for diversity. I was looking for, you know, a lot of fabulous party guests that would just be very diverse. So I wanted authors. I wanted mommy bloggers. I wanted international folks. I wanted social media types, internet marketers. I wanted foodies. I wanted fitness providers. I wanted executive coaches. I even wanted lawyers. That's how, you know, that's how weird I was. And So that's what I have, is just this huge assortment of people. And some of them I know, you know, quite well just by virtue of having followed them for over 2 years. Although, there, you know, there are a few new ones to the bunch, even though I don't follow back too frequently these days. But now I can see that, you know, what happens is, if you have this diverse group of people, even if they kind of like you or you have an awareness of who you are and you've had conversations with them, they're not necessarily interested in anything I have to say, right? So that's kind of the problem that you run into. And I think by being a little more targeted and taking, in that respect, a more business-like approach, you probably gain a better audience for any sort of thing that you put out. And, you know, the other thing is, in terms of my tweets, I have just sort of a, you know, desperate need to be as random and as stupid as I can most of the time. So, I don't know. What do you think about all that?
Why? I wonder why you feel such a need to be so random and crazy on there.
Because that's pretty much, you know, just authentic Kay. You know, I mean, I think I'm smart, you know, and I think I do some things that are smart, but I'm just more interested in just being, you know, nuts, I suppose. I don't know.
I like the way you say, you know, when you go to a dinner party and you want all kinds of people, because I do too. Even though I tend to gravitate, of course, toward internet marketers because I'm interested in that, even the internet marketers all have different niches. So, you know, I may know a photographer, I may know a hypnotist, you know, an author, those kinds of things. They may all be under the umbrella of internet marketers because more and more people are, you know, marketing things on the internet. But I still feel like my group on Twitter is a very, very diverse group, and I love that. You know, they all come from different places, different parts of the world, and I absolutely love that part of it.
Yeah, and it helps you, it really gives you, I think, a broad-based knowledge of what people are interested in and exposes you to a lot of cool things. On the other hand, once again, you just have to have the time for it. You know, do you have time to be exposed to all of those?
And how much time do you need? You know, if somebody's on Twitter 15 minutes a day, maybe that's all the time they want. I think time is kind of irrelevant as far as, you know, the amount of time that you spend on Twitter. I think that's a personal thing there. I absolutely love it because I love networking, and, you know, it would not bother me to be on Twitter all day long. I mean, I just plain like it that much.
Well,
but I realize that other people are, you know, don't want to do that.
You are fabulous on Twitter, and you are so genuinely friendly, except in the middle of the night when you're, you know, tweeting outrageously. By automation. But, you know, you really are an important part of the community because people just love your personality there. But, you know, one of the things that we encounter as citizens of the Twitter community, if you will, is these leaderboards and these different services that want to evaluate us as Twitter users, and they're very interesting to me. I did some writing almost 2 years ago, actually, when I was campaigning stringently against Follow Friday. I did some writing and some research, if you will, about some of the leaderboards and how people were gaming them, you know. So a lot of the tweeting, particularly at that time and maybe still, people are tweeting in a certain manner in order to game those leaderboards and to have as high a score as possible on those different indicators, like clout would be one of them, but Twitter Grader.
Right. You know, I've really never participated much in that. I mean, I'll go to Twitter Grader and get my grades because I think it's a fun thing to do. You know, it takes a second. But as far as really being conscious of all that, I'm really not. I mean, when I'm on there, I'm just doing my thing, being myself. And I think I resonate with people for that reason. But isn't it funny how all we're doing is typing, but you really get a feel for people's personalities on there. Like some people have such strong personalities. They come when they come on Twitter, it's like, bam, there they are. And then some people just see, you know, they're just lurking, you know.
Well, that's the other thing that's fascinating, that there are a lot of people who follow us who are there on a daily basis, but we don't know that because they don't tweet very much and they don't interact, but they go there to read. And coming to realize that has been, you know, just kind of an amazing sort of thing. But as far as those leaderboards, Martha, even though you don't do anything with them or pay much attention to them, what I'm saying is that those leaderboards have some influence in terms of the way people tweet and the nature of their tweets. So a lot of the things that you're experiencing and reading, you know, unbeknownst to you, they are being done to game the leaderboards. And so it's really, that's really funny. There are so many kind of fun services. And one I became aware of this week is called Tweet Love. And I think it's Tweet, L-U-V, tweetlove.com. And what it does is you put in your username and you put in another person's, you know, in my case, it would be someone of the opposite gender. You put their username and it tells you the odds that you will have a love relationship with any given user. And
that's hilarious.
It doesn't give you any clues as to the algorithms that they use. You know, so you don't know if it's based on total numbers of tweets between you or how many times they've retweeted you or any of those things. But I put in several, you know, candidates, including my ex-husband. And it said that there was a 14% chance that I would have a relationship with him and to forget about it. And
well,
this was spot on. This is free advice. Yeah, but the other thing they did, I put in my Twitter crush, and it said only a 58% chance. It said, you know, maybe, but the odds aren't terribly good. So, you know, it's...
Maybe we should talk about Twitter crushes, because everybody's got one. Come on.
Oh, well, I've been very...
When they sign on, they just absolutely, they think they're, you know, they're fun to talk.
You're right. They ought to put that as part of the profile, but I think it takes a while, you know, to develop. But I've been very, very open for, you know, well over a year that Kamala Spearley is my Twitter crush in addition to being my business partner. So, in fact, I have a list. I have two lists that are public lists. And one is Twitter crush, and it's just him. And the other is mortal enemy, which is just Patty Dye. I only have one mortal enemy, thank God. You know, one is plenty. And so, yeah, I agree with you. Everyone has a Twitter crush. Who is yours?
Oh, well, you know, I was just going to say, everyone has one except for me. I don't have one.
Oh, Martha, I do not believe that.
I've got a bunch of Twitter crushes. Are you kidding? I love the people on Twitter. I've not met anybody that didn't sound fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. So you have a million Twitter crushes. Huh.
Well, wait, let me say 4,276.
Well, there you go. So another service that is very cool, I think, is, and once again, I haven't checked this URL to make sure this is right, but I think this is right. It's called myfirsttweet.com. And so you can go there and put in your username, and it will pull up your very first tweet, and you can see the date. So that's how you can know your exact anniversary of when you started Twitter. Are you there? Martha,
I'm here. I'm sorry. Something muted somewhere, I think. I'm here.
Yeah. I completely lost your audio. So anyway, my first tweet is where you can find out your actual anniversary. And if that's something, you know, if that's a day that is meaningful to you, you know, then cool, you know it. If it's a day that you abhor, well, you know the day that you...
I don't know when my first tweet is, but I'm going to go look at it, that's for sure.
Well, you know, one of the things that you shared with me today. And since you told me, I decided I should tell everyone, you know, because that's the kind of friend I am. Your information is protected with me. And by that, what I mean is it's protected in that it will go on the record. You know, you didn't say.
Okay, I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, did I tell her that she could do that?
Yeah. No, you didn't. You absolutely didn't. But one of the things that you shared with me that I think is so, in its own way, charming and something that a lot of our listeners can relate to and something that we talked a little bit about last week on the show is that in the course of giving your webinar, last night's webinar was a free webinar to introduce people to training that you're giving on how to use Twitter. And one of the things that you had to do, of course, was to pitch your product. And it made you a little uncomfortable. You said you hated it. Martha, once again, you're muted, so I don't know what to say. At any rate, I can totally relate to that. You did a very, very good job about it. You were actually very smooth. And it is so hard. You know, I go back to my own experience, and I typically, certainly as a lawyer and as a consultant, as a speaker, I haven't had any problem at all asking people to pay my fee. But that is despite having been raised in an environment where we were told, we were taught in either explicitly or implicitly that we were never to talk about money or sex, and we were to never ask for either. So this is something that I have in some way managed to get beyond, and I think there is every likelihood that you're going to become more comfortable at it.
Okay. I don't know if you know this, but I lost the call there for a few minutes. We're having terrible weather here, actually, thunder, lightning, and that kind of thing.
Oh, are you? We cannot hear that at all. Well, I did know that I had lost you, and I just went on and on and on, and so you
don't
know.
Well, I heard money and sex, so what was going on? It seems like it took an interesting turn while I was gone.
What I was talking about is your revelation to me today that it was a little difficult for you when it came time to make the offer. And I told you that no one would know that. You sounded very comfortable with it. You sounded good with it. But it is a hard thing to do for a lot of people.
Well, I think it was the fact that I wasn't looking at my customers, because mm-hmm. I certainly don't have problems making an offer. I don't have problems closing an offer. You know, I was in real estate for a while, and before, I mean, my whole life I've sold something. So as far as that, that part wasn't comfortable. But it was just so weird, making the offer and not getting any feedback, because usually when you're going in to close on a product, you're getting your signals from your customer about the closing, and so it was very awkward about it. I don't think it really had anything to do with making the offer as much as I couldn't, I wasn't getting any response on the other end.
Yeah, and that won't change when you're doing a webinar or a seminar. You know, there is someone who is a very successful internet marketer, a woman who calls her branded program the Invisible Close, and one of the things that she certainly sells as instruction on how to sell from the stage or how to sell in a seminar and how to do it in such a clever and graceful way that people will not know that it's happening to them. But I can tell you, I always know it's happening to me, and I'm very likely to be sucked into it. You know, I'm like the perfect potential customer because I seem to always be looking for something to buy. Does that surprise you?
It doesn't. I mean, a shopper, I felt like you were, yes.
I pretty much am. And, one of the way it works, and it's just kind of an interesting, as I was thinking about things we'd talk about today, I took a look at this. It's kind of a path. So I got a newsletter, and it's a newsletter that I don't always read, but I happened to read this edition, and it had a link. It talked about an event that this person had had and mentioned that someone had been her sponsor and had a link to that sponsor. So I clicked on the link and went to the sponsor's website, and I looked at it for a minute, and it mentioned that she did a blog talk radio show and that her most recent guest had been J.J. Virgin, who wrote a book about sexy arms. Well, Martha, everyone wants sexy arms. Would you agree with that?
Yeah.
I mean, I pretty much will just state for the record, I would like to have sexy arms, okay? So we're talking about Michelle Obama arms. We're talking about arms. And so I went to the website. I listened to the radio show, and then I went to the website of this J.J. Virgin, and she's someone who's apparently pretty well-known in the field of fitness, but I'd never heard of her. She'd been the Dr. Phil's expert for 2 years. Well, I don't watch a Dr. Phil, but, someone who is well-known. And she had this video of a stepper, a very expensive stepper that you use, and you use dumbbells at the same time and so forth. So I went from there and clicked onto the I looked it up on Google, the manufacturer's website. And then I went from there to eBay, and the manufacturer has a website there, and I'm really toying with buying one. So, it's just like I feel like I'm helpless. I opened a newsletter from someone, a newsletter I don't even read every time, and it all led to this. So what do you think about that? I mean,
I think it's interesting. I think that chain was very interesting, how you started in one place and went, 50 million other places to end up thinking about buying something that would give you sexy arms. At the very beginning, you weren't even thinking about having sexy arms.
I'm always thinking about having sexy arms, but I really wasn't at the time I opened the newsletter. And, I'm glad you think it's interesting, because what we try to do on Women Are Not Funny Radio is we try to be interesting on occasion. It's an hour-long show. We try to devote at least 7 to 12 minutes to interesting stuff. But, it is, to me, the reason it's interesting is it kind of shows the opportunity of the Internet, how random things can lead to sales. Now, it didn't lead to a sale of the woman who sent the newsletter, right? Or to her sponsor, or to her sponsor's guest on the radio show, but it will probably lead to a cash transaction. So it's just,
That's kind of what we were talking about last night. I mean, that to me is the power of Twitter. People are like, why do you send out the link to your blog so often? Well, here's why. Because somebody like you might click on or might tweet it to somebody else who clicks on it, someone that I don't know. They come back and read it, a couple of days later. They end up telling someone about it who goes there, who was never thinking about internet marketing or setting up a site, and then they end up on my site. They sign up for my freebie, which is how to get yourself started on the internet, 7 steps. And from there, all of a sudden, they're like, oh my gosh, I want to be an internet marketer. And in the beginning, they were never thinking about it. All they were doing was spending some time on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely. Or they might go to your site and they might click on a link for hosting, or you have some different affiliate programs there, or any sort of thing. And the fact that it could happen 24 hours a day. Listen, we're running down to the end of the hour. I have to get into pet peeves and what I would call my cranky tweet list, because I want to know what you think. Well, you mentioned last night in your webinar, thanks for the real estate, you mentioned the fact that I just hate quotes of dead people as tweets. Hate it. What do you think?
you know, I like them on occasion, but some people, that's all they do. I mean, it's like they're married to Abraham Lincoln and Mark Twain. Come on, people. Say something
I think my suspicion is it's the automated tweet crowd, but I don't know. And see, the thing, Martha, I want to be on the record is I love Mark Twain. I think he's brilliant, a brilliant writer. I'm a big fan. I think he had very many pithy sayings that are worthy of being quoted. That is why in my library in my home in Virginia, I have many quote books because I like quotes. As a speaker, I use them on occasion, but I just don't tune in to Twitter to get quotes. You know, I would go to the reference book. Okay, here's something else I just hate. Can't help it. Four square location checks.
Yeah.
How do you feel
matter?
About those?
Does it matter? Do we care?
Well, you know what? I always feel misled because I never have sense enough to read the link before I click it. So they'll say something like, I just had the most scrumptious po' boy sandwich at, you know, they'll say the name of the restaurant. And then there's a link. And I think I'm going to be going to a photograph of the sandwich or a photograph of the restaurant, either of which would be interesting to me. Instead, I go to a Foursquare page that gives me a location on a map. You know, and I just think,
right.
So
it's
I hate
like
that.
You're not really going there. I know what you mean. I want to back up for just a second on the what we were saying about the quotes. I do send out quotes, and in fact, my last tweet was a Bob Dylan quote. Just want to say that every now and then I do send out quotes. Mm-hmm. I like them, but some people send them out all the time. It's like the people that are always promoting their product. It's like, me, look at me, look at what I'm doing. Come on, engage. Let's all talk.
Well, the thing about it is, if you surround the quote with some context, you know, if you say something like, I love this quote, blah, 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 blah. I mean, I think the test for me of whether it's a good tweet is it something a person would say? You know, you don't just walk up to someone and issue a quote and say Mark Twain, right? You would put some context if you're having a conversation. So that's my little song and dance. So, okay, here's another thing I hate, automated third-party tweets. And so that would be an example of that would be, you know, at somebody just unlocked the mayor's badge on Foursquare. Or, you know, one person that I adore, and I adore her on Twitter, but my friend Deb Puchala, I would get her horoscope in the middle of the night every night. You know, and so that was automated. Don't care for those.
Okay, I have to ask you this. Do you use, does it come to your phone? Do your tweets come to your phone? Do you get little tweets?
They do not.
No,
they do not. I did that for a very short period of time, and I actually did it when I was first on Twitter.
Yeah.
And so I would get these tweets. So-and-so just, you know, followed you or whatever. It was just wild. I would get, you know, I hated that. I turned that off. Do you get them on your phone?
I don't get them from Twitter, no. I still get a few from Facebook, but not that many. I've got it, you know, the tool where I don't get too many. No, because your phone goes off all during the night.
It would be crazy. It would be crazy. So here's something that apparently some people don't like, but I like them just fine. Tweets about food. Dinner tweets, food tweets, you know.
I kind of like those, too. I like to hear, like, combinations that people are eating, and I send them out, too. Like, if I'm just eating, you know, if all I could find in my house was a certain, you know, something to put between two pieces of bread, I tell people about it. I don't know why, but, you know, there's something about the food tweets that makes people very real, because we all eat, and it's interesting to see what people are eating.
It absolutely is, and you know, I won't sit here and say, you know, it's inspiring in that I read that and go, oh, man, let me go to the market and duplicate that.
No, it doesn't do me that way either.
But it is, you know, it is very interesting, and I have always liked that. Now, here's something I hate, though. Here's another, you know, this is going to sound very cranky, but it is so sincere. I hate retweets of people that I don't like or don't follow. So So just imagine this scenario. There's someone I don't like. I purposely do not follow them. So, you know, they're out of mind, out of Twitter stream. And then someone that I like or someone that I follow retweets them, and I have tweets from the person I do not like that I am confronted with. How do you feel about that? You probably like everyone. It probably doesn't
apply. You know, I was just going to say that really doesn't even enter into my sphere because I really do like everybody. I really do.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, the more the merrier.
Yeah, me, I don't. I don't like everybody. Okay. Tweets about
I feel privileged that you like me, Kay. Are you?
I do like you. I can't help myself. You know, you're just extremely likable. Okay, but you know what? If I didn't like you, I would just not. Okay.
Right.
So, okay. And keep in mind that among the people I don't like, there are some I don't like them for very valid reasons, and then there are others I just randomly don't like them. So it's just totally unfair. Okay. How about tweets about the cute thing the baby did? Do you like those?
Oh, you know, that's a tough one because my kids are grown. I really don't care about that anymore. And because most of my friends now have, you know, the grandbabies, you know, I do have to hear about that when I'm around my friends. So I have to say those don't entice me unless I will say, let me qualify that. Some of them are absolutely hilarious. Somebody will come on and say something their child said, and they're just absolutely hilarious. The cute baby, I don't really care for those. But sometimes the kids say the darndest things, of course, and those are good.
Well, you're right. There's some people who think everything their kid says is cute. And, I mean, that's a good parenting, you know, trait. You know, I think that's great. But some of the cute things the baby did aren't all that cute. And some of them are really, they're not only cute, they're scary. You know, I think, oh, man, wait, you know, that kid's 5, wait until that kid's 14. You're going to have an interesting life because that kid's sharp. Okay, what about sporting event tweets? You like
I actually participate in those. During football season, if the University of Tennessee's playing and I'm sitting on Twitter with my laptop, you know, I'm usually right in there listening to what people are saying. I actually enjoy the sporting events.
You know what? This is really,
sport I'm watching,
really crazy.
You know,
I am not terribly into sports, but I love sporting event tweets. Somehow they just give – the people who tweet – about sporting events, they're so happy and excited, or they're so
passionate. Oh yeah,
they're so bummed
out,
or whatever.
Winning or losing, they're like kaboom. They're
yeah.
Singing.
I think they're a blast. I can't say I pay much attention to them, but I just like having them there. It's really really weird.
Yeah,
okay.
I like them too.
How do you feel about bad news tweets like I lost my job or the dishwasher overflowed and I can't afford a new one? How do you feel about that?
You know, I'm all about positivity, so I really don't like those. And I make it a point not to bring. You know, we got enough of that going on in the world. Let's not bring it to Twitter, really and truly. I don't want to hear it.
You know what? And that brings up another one. And this will be, you know, I have a long list, but this will have to be our last. Customer service tweets. You know, there's been so much written about the potential for Twitter and the use of Twitter as a customer service device. Listen to your customers, you know, answer their needs, whatever. But I just hate the idea, you know, I mean, that is not why I tune into Twitter, to listen to people rag on companies that aren't pleasing them for what, you know, whatever reason. And I had the experience actually last summer, and he's been blogging about it since, but there's an internet marketer who was making all kinds of complaints against an airline and about how they weren't doing good customer service and blah, 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 blah. At the very same time, I was trying to get some customer service from him, not getting anywhere. So don't you have the nerve to so publicly call out this company when you are rotten at customer service yourself? And so, but I had this recent experience where I am now part of something with Dell Computer Company. I am on their customer advisory panel. And the reason I am is because I had a cranky tweet about Dell about Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it was about a year ago, and it wasn't intended. You know, I didn't do it with hopes they would listen or anything. But a Twitter friend was complaining about her issues, and I said I had had some problems as well. So they had listened, and they had kept record of that, and they pulled it up, you know, and decided they wanted me on the customer advisory panel. And they invited two groups of people. They paid the expenses and everything to go to Dell headquarters. I was unable to go, but I'm still on the panel. And so, you know, I think it's cool. I was certainly impressed that they were listening, and I was happy to be part of that. And, in fact, today, just before this call, Federal Express delivered a little gift pack to me from them. And, unfortunately, it didn't have one of their new Streak phones in it, but it did have a very good-looking leather journal and a very good-looking pen. But
you know what? You touched on the power of Twitter. That is the power of Twitter. They would not have known that you existed had you not been participating in the conversation there. And look where it led. I mean, I love that story, Kay.
Well, absolutely. And the fact of the matter is, though, they have always been, you know, I was always aware that they were on Twitter because one of the first people I followed was Richard at Dell. And he was very friendly, and he also was very, very forthcoming with information about Dell's social media initiatives. So I knew that they were active in social media and blah, blah, blah. But they decided to become active in this additional sort of way. And one of the reasons I think that they reached out to me is because they knew about the millions of listeners of Women Are Not Funny, right? And so they said, what an opportunity. But what is really funny, this gift pack that they sent, I have to tell about it because I think it's funny in and of itself. So they sent me this is apparently something that they use, you know, maybe they use it with investor relations, whatever, because it's branded, it has the Dell brand on it, and it says it's from the executive center on every page, and so it's very good looking, and I'm sure it cost them a bundle. They also sent a tote bag that looks like every, you know, your stereotype geeky tote bag. It's gray and black nylon, and it has net on it, and it has Dell embroidered on it, and it looks like a tote bag that you might get at PodCamp or something like that. And what is funny about it to me is the person who would like and who would use the leather journal would not be using the tote bag. You know, it's like they're trying to cover every sort of personality. And then they sent me a CD of Austin music. So, you know, it was very thoughtful of them and also, you know, extraordinarily funny to me. But anyway, Martha, you have been just a delight once again. And I wish you every success in all of your endeavors, but in particularly in your new Twitter course, because I think there is a real need for someone who really knows what they're doing, like you, to help newbies get on board and use it to their advantage.
Well, thank you. It's at tweetwithmartha.com. Don't you think that's a cute name, Kay? Tweet with Martha.
I think it's a fabulous name, and it's something that I would think people would be very fortunate to do.
Okay. Well, I've enjoyed it.